Welcome back. 239-1310. 239-1310. It's Afternoons with Amos. A few weeks ago, a note crossed my email box, and it was kind of unusual. It wasn't unusual, the subject. It was unusual, the agency that was talking about it, Marion County Prosecutor Terry Curry, and his office was participating in something to help educate the community about gangs. And over the years, that's been a subject where schools don't want to talk about it. A lot of times, my friends in law enforcement don't want to talk about it. There have been other instances where the elected prosecutor of the day hasn't wanted to talk about it. But it looks like the prosecutor of the day, that's something that he wants the community to talk about. So we got a hold of the folks at the prosecutor's office and said, you know, I think it's long past time to kind of let the community know from, you know, a law standpoint, what are gangs. When people hear gang activity, what does that really mean? Where does activity by a group of people that may dress alike or think alike or wave their hands in funny ways in public, where does that cross the line to be a crime, to be illegal? As well as maybe parents and grandparents listening may not know the signs if their young person or their grandchildren might be involved in gang activity. So in the house, we have a couple of career prosecutors that are here. Marianne Fleetwood has been involved with the gang unit at the Marion County Prosecutor's Office. I think she knows a lot. I kind of get the feeling. And Sean Hessler is the supervisor of the gang unit with the Marion County Prosecutor's Office. Well, now I must tell you, these people are officers of the court. They are attorneys. We have a new justice of the Indiana Supreme Court, and I'm not getting in trouble with him. So they cannot make any comment or talk about any case that is active or a case that is up on appeal anywhere in the appeals process between here and the Supreme Court in Washington, D.C. So with that caveat, we welcome Deputy Prosecutors Assistant. I may promote you before this whole show is over with. Prosecutor Sean Hessler and Marianne Fleetwood. Guys, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Let me go back to basics. In the law, in Indiana statute, what does it define what a gang is?
It does. And I brought the statute with me because we don't want to guess at these things. And so I'll read it for you specifically. A criminal gang is defined. Criminal gang means a group with at least three members that specifically either promotes, sponsors, or assists in, or participates in, or requires as a condition of membership or continued membership, the commission of a felony or an act that would be a felony if committed by an adult, or the offense of battery. That's what the statute says. Now, to break that down, that basically means we need at least three people together. Mm-hmm. The three people need to promote, sponsor, or assist, that is, to do or to encourage someone or to aid someone to either commit a felony or a battery, mm-hmm. Or they can do these things, either commit the felony or the battery, or if they're required to commit a felony or commit a battery, to be in the group, which we'll call the criminal gang. And the example there is, you know, go break into someone's house and, mm-hmm. you know, steal me a gold necklace and bring it back and you can be in.
And that's part of your initiation. If you do that, you'll be a member of our group.
Correct. And battery is in there, obviously, because beat-ins and beat-downs are common in the gang culture. Either we beat you in ourselves to show that you're tough, or you have to go beat up someone for us.
What's the difference between someone or a group of people that are in a Greek organization, a fraternity or sorority, and they haze someone and that hazing becomes violent and they get beat up or beat down? Is that a criminal gang activity?
It could be. There is a hazing statute.
Okay.
And actually, there is a case on point. I've got that in my bag. I won't drag it out and bore you with it. It starts as a B misdemeanor. However, if it results in injury, it elevates it to a D felony, which is the same level offense as the criminal gang activity. Now, if that organization mm-hmm. met all of these elements, that is three or more people with a Greek organization would have, mm-hmm. And they promoted or assisted in what would be a criminal act, either a felony or a battery.
Right.
And I guess if it was paddling, for example, that got out of control and that mm-hmm. was a battery, arguably that could be charged.
The statute does not define clothing or tattoos or identifying marks as meaning you're in a gang?
It does not.
So three folks in suits who plan a criminal activity, that could be criminal gang activity?
Yes.
Okay.
If the activity is in furtherance of the gang.
Okay.
Beyond the statute, the courts of appeal and Supreme Court have further defined that we need a nexus. You need something more. It can't just be the organization. And that's where the statute butts up against the First Amendment and the association.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do something to further the criminal gang.
Okay.
So in your example, that would be the planning
the planning of it.
Mm-hmm. That would be a criminal gang.
A lot of when you go out in the community and you talk to folks about gangs, what do they think they are? You know, what are the misconceptions as you've gone out in the community and you talk to folks about this, or you have the seminars and what have you? What does the community come back to? What do they think this is?
I think many times they refer to what have traditionally been known as, you know, the Crips and the Bloods, the kind of the things we've seen in movies and so on and so forth. Each community is kind of unique in the sense that gangs take on different formats depending on the community they're from. We've gone to a number of conferences and in various cities across the country. The gangs take on a different appearance.
Right.
Their activities are different. So mm-hmm. many times people in the community do use those as touch points and believe that that, in fact, defines a gang.
Is there criminal – well, let me ask two different questions. There are associations of individuals who would consider themselves in a group, whether I would call them a gang or you would call them a gang. They exist everywhere in the city and county. Is that fair to say?
Sure. Yes.
Are criminal gangs existing in all parts of the city or county?
Oh, I say absolutely. I don't know that there's any part of the county or organization in this county that's necessarily – you know, free or exempt from criminal gangs. And touching on what Marianne said is it's not East Coast, West Coast anymore, especially here in Indianapolis. It's just associations essentially of proximity. And what we'll have here is kids or, you know, young adults maybe in one gang at school,
mm-hmm.
another gang at the apartment complex, and a third gang, you know, over in their cousin's neighborhood.
That they belong to more than one?
Sure.
Really?
Right.
Because I think the perception would be, you're a Crip and you'll always be a Crip. And you can, it's like a West Side. So it's not like West Side Story. If I was going to write the modern indie West Side Story, somebody could be in the one group and then they in another group and the dancing would be even more complicated.
Very much so. Correct.
Really?
Yes.
We're learning stuff today. 239, you may have questions. 239-1310. 239-1310 is Afternoons with Amos, or send me a text message at 85620, keyword Amos, or send me an email at praiseindy.com. Again, they cannot and I will not let them comment on any active case or case that is on appeal. So don't be trying. We ain't going to try to try stuff up in here. 239-1310. 239-1310 is Afternoons with Amos. Somebody sent me an email at praiseindy.com. Because when we hear the perception of gangs, it's the guys, it's the brothers, it's the caballeros, it's men. And the question is, are there any violent girl gangs here in Indianapolis?
There are. There are certainly violent young women in this town. Just recently, Marianne and I tried a jury. She was 16-year-old girl?
18 by now. 18.
18 by now at the time, 16-year-old, essentially. They weren't solely girls, but she was a female member of this gang, and basically they had conspired to shoot someone, and someone did indeed get shot. You know, this was a 16-year-old girl.
But you raised another thing, because another perception is the gang is all guys, all girls, they're integrated. Is there a lot more integration?
It's really all of the... All of the above. There are groups of just girls,
mm-hmm.
there are groups of just guys, and there are groups of both. There are junior organizations to get into the senior group.
Mm-hmm.
There are, beyond the senior group, there are umbrella groups.
Are any of them multiracial?
Yes.
Yes.
Because another one of the perceptions, there's black gangs, there's white gangs, there's Hispanic gangs, and they don't mix. That's not the reality in 2012?
Well, I think generally it probably is. However, you do see crossovers because just like Sean mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. they may belong to a gang at school where there may be mixed race kids right. going, and then they get into their neighborhood and they're in a group that is a single racial group.
So somebody could be in a group in school mm-hmm. and that's just a group, and maybe they do, then that group doesn't cross the line into criminal activity, but then they're in another group in their neighborhood, and maybe that group might cross a line.
Sure, certainly. And it's the problem that we have, and the hard thing to delineate is, you know, at what point does it become a criminal gang?
Right.
Well, that's when the crimes occur. In all of the trials that we've done, defense attorneys love to say, you know, don't convict my guy for hanging out with the wrong people. Mm-hmm. And we never do. And in rebuttal, we'll say, we're not asking you to convict them because they have bad friends. No, it's because, for example, she had a gun and she shot someone. That's the crime.
That's an act.
Right. And then so once you're doing something, that's what we want to criminalize, and that's the gang problem. You know, hanging out, clicking up, having friends, that's clearly we don't have any problem with that. But once you go beyond the step to, hey, let's rob a liquor store, hey, let's break into a house, or let's go beat up someone else, that's when we have a problem. That's when it becomes criminal. That's what we have to fight.
239-1310, 239-1310's Afternoon's Names. Let's start on the phones today with Anonymous. Hi there. Hello? Anonymous?
Truly Anonymous.
Anonymous going once. Anonymous going twice. Anonymous lost their place at 239-1310. Let me go to Reverend Ajabu. Hi there.
Hey, Miss, how you doing?
I'm fine.
And your guest, Mary Ann and Trent, was it?
It's Sean.
Sean, okay. I wanted to take it to another level and talk about whether there could be a white-collar gang. And the crime would be that a Social Security number is issued after someone has died. The players would be two, and I won't mention their names, but maybe I should.
Eli Lilly
and Methodist Hospital.
No, now see, you went from hypothetical to specific, and I can't let them go. That I can't let them go there.
You understand what I'm saying? But the Social Security number mm-hmm. is issued after the person has died, which is fraud, and it's a federal crime, or actually a felonious crime.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be filed with your office? How would one pursue that?
So you're saying if someone illegally procured a Social Security number for someone that passed away?
Yes.
That's a federal crime.
Yeah, it's a federal crime, but I would think the fraud is also a state crime because they have committed fraud. And I'm just wondering, from the prosecutor's point of view, and Amos, you raise a good question, would you handle that? And if you did, how would someone put that in process?
All right, I'm going to be real careful. And if that were to occur, is there an Indiana law that's broken?
If someone's committing fraud on a financial institution or otherwise, I am not familiar with that law. But it seems like illegally obtaining a Social Security number would be federal. But if there's fraud going on, yes. The place to start is with the police. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have grand jury investigators, but the vast majority, you know, of everything starts with the police.
So take the evidence to the police station nearest you.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, but I can use that question to answer another issue about the white collar crimes. You started this with the, you know, three guys in a suit. We also have a corrupt business enterprise mm-hmm. statute, you know, which is essentially our version of the RICO, mm-hmm. which is very similar to the gang, but it doesn't require, you know, three or more members to commit a felony. The language is a little different, and it requires two or more predicate acts, and then it lists specific acts. Fraud,
right.
Theft, which would be one of them. So if we couldn't prosecute something like that under the gang statute, we could possibly prosecute that under the criminal business enterprise.
So I guess the answer is gather up the evidence and take it to the police station nearest you, or Reverend Job will just take it straight to Chief Krzyzewski, because I'm sure he would take that information from you. Let me go to Anonymous at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hello, everyone. How are you?
We're fine.
Fine.
Oh, that's good. It's good to hear you, Amos, and taking care of business as usual.
Thank you.
Well, hey, I can't call you to give you the skinny on what the new gang face is. I tell you, in the suburbs, you know, crime in the residential areas are up. And we always focus on black crimes and the gangs, black gangs. But there's a new gang out, and they're white, and they're used to living a certain way, and they're not able to get jobs just like most of us black people, and they're forming organizations, or maybe not an organization, but getting together, and they're watching when people leave. They watch when they come. And it's a large network of them, and they're striking when they know your patterns and your activity. So in the suburb, don't think it's just all black-on-black crime, because everybody's quality of living has been compromised.
Great.
And so they are doing what they have to do. That doesn't make it right, and it's not right. But people are doing what they have to do, and power does corrupt. You'd be surprised at the police department. I mean, there's none that's, that is not above these actions. So we're going to see a lot more. The face of the gang this activity is going to surprise a lot of you, because they drive in fancy cars, and they ride, and they're wearing good clothes, and they acting like I'm Mr. John Thomas, but they have people riding around watching other people breaking in homes, stealing, getting their stuff and selling it so they can live out in the suburbs.
Well, now, Anonymous, let me ask you a couple things. When you say the suburbs, are we talking still within Marion County, or are you talking about Avon, Brownsburg, Fishers?
Well, I'm talking about still, all over. It's all over. You'll be surprised at the different ones that's in it, but mainly in Pike Township and all around.
Have you,
I
get that part. Have you reported this to the police, and the police have ignored it?
Well, I'm suspicious of the police department. I'm very suspicious of them. I mean, that's the biggest gang mafia that you can get involved in. And why they still have Owensby still in there, why he hasn't been replaced, demoted, or somebody else take over that department.
I don't think you mean Owensby. I think you mean Bizard.
No, I mean Owensby.
Oh, you mean Owensby. Okay.
Yes,
all right. Well, I appreciate that. Let me get the prosecutor's response. How big a problem is mistrust of law enforcement, even mistrust of the prosecutor's office, where people see what's going on and they're afraid to talk about it, either for fear of reprisal or a lack of confidence that law enforcement isn't in on it?
I would agree wholeheartedly that, in fact, that is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Just to let the caller know, we do have, I don't keep track number-wise, but we certainly have a substantial number of gangs that are primarily white,
mm-hmm.
primarily Latino,
mm-hmm.
that are prosecuted on a very regular basis. So it isn't, as she said, just a black issue. And our office makes no difference when the prosecutions are going on. The police are the that is the intervening unit that needs to be contacted. I understand if there is mistrust and distrust, but there is no other way for those cases to get to our office so that they can be prosecuted. So we need the cooperation of the community. And even if there is distrust, I think we need to find a way to get over that distrust.
Mm-hmm.
We work with a lot of fine police officers all the time. I'm sure you have run across a number of them that are fine officers. And if you, as a community, a member of a community, see something that is out of line, incorrect, improper, illegal, please feel free to pass that along. It is not ignored.
How do you, the person that wants to testify, the person that knows the information, how do you keep them safe? How, you know, in terms of, particularly with the very violent gangs, how do you keep them safe from retaliation? And again, people's perceptions are colored by television, by the crime shows, and everybody has seen an episode of Law and Order or this, that, and the other, where somebody tries to do the good thing and then the bad guys shut them up.
Right. It's hard to do. Generally speaking, we don't hide witnesses in a safe house. That's mm-hmm. that's just not a reality. I believe it has been known to happen in exceptional cases, but that's just the type of thing that this county doesn't have. So we have to rely on the courts a bit. One of the things that a judge has to consider in setting a person's bail is the danger to the community. Mm-hmm. You consider the criminal history, but also the danger to the community, and we always argue that. And if the judge finds that they're dangerous, then if the person's in jail, clearly our witnesses are safer that way. That's one thing that we can do. Close contact with the police helps. And, you know, we're going to get into some big picture stuff here, but there's Crime Watch, neighborhood crime watches right. can help. Mm-hmm. Neighbors looking out for neighbors helps. But as far as, you know, keeping that one bad guy away from that one willing witness, it can be hard. And go ahead.
One of the other perceptions is that gangs are mostly people 10 to 17 or 10 to 18. What's from your experience, what's the ages? Is it all over the board? Are there some senior citizen gangs out there?
It's the same as we've been saying all interview, that yes, there are that. There are gangs of very young. I won't say there are gangs of very old people. I have not, in my experience, seen a gang of very old people. I think the oldest person that I've seen associated with a gang might have been in his 40s. But everywhere in that range.
239-1310, 239-1310's After News Namus. We're talking about gangs with the folks from the Marion County Prosecutor's Office, Sean Hessler and Marianne Fleetwood. Another email at praiseindy.com. And somebody mentioned this to me in a conversation I had, knowing that this program was coming up. They said, you know, Amos, would you ask them about racially motivated gangs, i.e. skinheads? This emailer said, could you ask your guests if they work with the Southern they said Southern University Law Center, and I think regarding any gangs located here, from an African American community standpoint, do we have gangs, you know, who exist, you know, who are built on racist philosophies and tendencies, and is that something local police deal with, or is that something that crosses into, you know, possible federal territory?
Both. We do have those gangs. In my experience, we haven't prosecuted one yet. There may or may not be ongoing investigations into some of those organizations. I don't recall a skinhead type prosecution happening. I mean, if a case develops and we can prosecute it, obviously we will, as long as they're engaged in, you know, furtherance of a crime. And if that's hurting black people, then, well, that's certainly a crime, and there would be your gang nexus.
239-1310, 239-1310's After News Namus. We're talking about gangs. We'll take a break when we come back. How do you know if your son or daughter or granddaughter or grandson are in a gang? Might be a gang at school, might be a gang in the neighborhood, might be a gang in the apartment complex. You never know. Also, where does all this Facebook, Twitter, in other words, if somebody puts on Twitter, I'm in a gang and I'm about to rob the village pantry, you know, have they committed a crime, or they just have First Amendment rights to be stupid on the internet? All that and more. We're talking about gangs, and we're learning stuff today that we may not have known. It's After News with Amos after these. All right, we're talking about gangs. 239-1310, 239-1310. It's After News with Amos. So, where young people use Facebook and Twitter, they put all kind of pictures and videos up on Facebook and Twitter. What is the line between somebody, you know, running off at the mouth in social media and crossing that line where
that could be evidence used against a person to demonstrate, which your job is to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that a crime has been committed.
Right. Well, first day of law school, I learned that the answer to every question is it depends.
Okay.
And that is going to—
So it depends. Okay.
So it depends. Taking the easiest example, someone's in a rival gang and I post on my Facebook that I'm going to kill him. Mm-hmm. You know, he's in a rival gang and they're a bunch of punks. We don't like him. So I'm going to go kill him tonight. Mm-hmm. That's going to be pretty clear that that's an intimidation at the very least, mm-hmm. because it's a threat communicated
right.
to someone with the intent that, you know, someone engage in conduct, maybe not go to the dance. That's going to be the easy one. Yeah, that's a crime. We should charge that. Someone doesn't like someone, mm-hmm. they say, well, you know, well, if I just say the guy's a punk, is that a crime? Well, maybe not, then, because then you're just voicing your opinion about someone. That's probably not. So, you know, somewhere it depends on what you're communicating. And if you're taking any steps to accomplish that would play into the analysis. And then as to what is evidence and what is just free speech. You know,
that's why there's lawyers.
Right. I mean, anything that you say, I guess, can and will be used against you in a court of law if we can get the statement in. You know, so it depends.
What are there things parents and grandparents need to be observant of that would tell if the child under their care is in a gang? Obviously, the obvious one is all of a sudden if a 56-inch, a high-definition television set mysteriously appears in the house and the parent or grandparent didn't pay for it, and the kid said, you know, it fell off a truck in a tornado. Be suspicious of that.
Well, I think that's a huge. We get that a lot. They have electronic equipment that you didn't purchase. They have clothing mm-hmm. that is very expensive that, oh, my boyfriend gave it to me or my girlfriend gave it to me. Those kinds of things, which clearly do not make sense. Mm-hmm. If there are things that are in your home and it is your home, you're paying the rent for it, so you're in charge. You know, you need to be looking around and making sure that there aren't things there that you have not provided or a family member hasn't provided them. We find frequently, and of course, we're seeing them at the back end. We're seeing them when they're being prosecuted. We're seeing them where the parents go, well, those TVs, he said his friend gave it to us. Or, you know, you have to ask questions of mm-hmm. your kids. And mm-hmm. I think that, I mean, it's pretty basic sort of things to do in the home. If your kid is not able to get up in the morning, where was he all night? Mm-hmm. What time did he come in? Do you mm-hmm. know that? Mm-hmm. You know, again, I think we find a lot of parents do not appear to be in control of their homes. The kids pretty much come and go as they please. So I think if you are the parent or guardian, know where those kids are, yeah. You know. We get kids that are charged with crimes that occur 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning. You know, clearly they are out, and if you don't know where they are, you're needing to tighten up. You're not keeping your kids under control. So I think there's those kinds of things. I think when you see your kids with money, there's a lot of cash. If you see them with drugs. It's all the kind of signs that we see normally with any kind of crime.
So it's sort of like if you didn't buy it for them, if they don't have a job and they couldn't have bought it for themselves and they didn't play the lottery and they're under 18 so they can't play the lottery.
Well, and you know, we're finding so much of the time when the parents come in and we're dealing with them, they have no idea what grade their kid is in school, how many credits they have, what their grade point average is. When we ask them in court, what year is your child in school? They look at the kid over here and ask him, what grade are you in? So they're not being attentive to the things that are so important, mm-hmm. Particularly school. I mean, I think school is so fundamental, basis. If our kids are doing what they need to be doing and being in school, they're not going to be having some of these issues. The parents need to keep in contact with their school, their kids' schools.
Let me ask this, and this may be putting you on the spot, and I apologize for that, but one of the things in this town, it seems that it's the school's responsibility to police truancy. They don't seem to be doing that. Do we need to take a hard look as a city and county with all these multiplicity of schools that we have, that these school districts and the charters need to get back to enforcing truancy?
My opinion, sure. I mean, if we can do something to ensure that kids are going to school, what is the downside? I mean, somebody has to pay for it. Great, but we're paying for kids to go to school. I don't have any problem with that at all. I mean,
yeah. Tell the big boss. Maybe the big boss needs to call a press conference. Call everybody. Call this new overpaid deputy mayor for education. Call him in a room and say, "You want to help me out? Make these schools all enforce the truancy law." Because I got an audience that would love the truancy law. They're ready for the truancy laws to be enforced. They think that's the police department's job, and the police department said, "No, that's the school's job."
We have prosecuted parents on the truancy, and out at juvenile, they're working on some additional programs to to hold the child and the parent accountable to get their kids to school. So we are doing that.
Let me ask you, somebody sent me an email at praiseindia.com with three great questions that have to do with parents and kids. One, are there any programs available to help people get out of gangs? There's Alcoholics Anonymous, there's Narcotics Anonymous. Is there Gangs Anonymous, program to get you out of the clutches?
We were investigating this last week, and we did not find one.
Oh, that's not good.
Correct. Now, what can you do? I understand. If you're a 14 or 15 year old kid and you're in a gang and you want to get out, it's going to be hard. These are your friends, or are they really your friends? Is another debate to be had. But what can you do? There was a case recently, exactly that. A young kid went to the detective at school and said, "Hey, I'm in this gang and I need out. What do I do?" And he says, "Well, you have to get out, and then if they start bothering you, then we can charge them." And that, of course, that's what happened. There's a C felony, gang intimidation. It's a whole separate crime. If someone tries to get out and you won't let them out, or you retaliate against them for getting out, that's another crime. Now, obviously, ideally, we wouldn't have to prosecute someone, but so there is some deterrence there, that if you don't let someone out of your gang, you're gonna take a hit. And we will, of course, prosecute. And I really wanted to go after this gang for targeting this kid for wanting out. But as far as community programs, Gangs Anonymous, as you refer to it, we couldn't find one.
But I think there are a number of programs that are available for youth in the community, sponsored by the PAL Club, the Boys and Girls Clubs. Mm-hmm. The churches have after-school programs. So for a parent, since there doesn't appear at this point to be a large functioning group to address that, as a parent, certainly encourage your kids to get involved in those programs.
If a parent knows their kids in gang activity, should they report it?
I would say absolutely. I think it's the child is your primary responsibility. You are the one who needs to be first and foremost in line, looking out for their welfare. Them being involved in a gang is a no-win situation for that child. They will end up injured, in jail, or dead, most likely.
We've been talking about children. Let me take it up a demographic. If they're over 18, legally at that point they're an adult. Mm-hmm. But that means that we don't have a way to stay out of a gang for kids, and that means we don't have a program that could help young adults. It's amazing. You got programs if you're addicted to drugs, to get out of drugs, or addicted to alcohol, or addicted to a multiplicity of addictions, even food addiction. And if you're addicted to a gang, we don't have any. Lily Endowment, somebody call the Lily Endowment and tell them to break off $1 million and come help this. This is why I'm not on the board of any nonprofit that needs money from the Lily. This is insane. 239-1310, 239-1310. See, this, we're learning stuff today. Let me go to Ramona. Hi there.
Hello there.
How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well.
I am just stunned. I'm just learning so much today. What's up, Ramona?
Yes. What I'd like to know, most of us have seen on TV about the prison gangs, and seem like many of them are racially motivated, or, participate in their race, the gangs that participate with their race. My question is, when a prisoner is released who has been in a prison gang, what is the percentage of the ones that when they get out that they hook up with their old gangs?
Great question, Ramona. Great question.
I don't know that we have any numbers on anything like that. There would be a couple of things to consider, depending on the age that that person comes out. Did they, by any chance, learn some sort of a trade or a, you know, job skill while they were in there? Do they have children themselves now that they didn't have before? Have they aged out of the gang, if you will? You know, if the gang primarily was a, you know, a 15 to 20 year old gang, so those things would be taken into consideration. Hopefully. You know, the time that they were in there gave them the strength that they needed to make some good choices when they got out.
But this could you made a great point, and I think the caller made a great point, because this fits back into the whole reentry thing. If you got, you know, an individual that's trying to do right, trying to do the straight and narrow, and then it, you know, and then they find all these difficulties in getting a job or having to pay off the probation fees and the fees and what have you, and then all of a sudden they're former gang members in the neighborhood. Hey, I know you got trouble doing that probation fees. Such a deal I got for you.
And it's usually easier than, say, going to school or learning a trade. And unfortunately, we have so many of the people that we are dealing with, regardless of their age, the gang crew that we're dealing with, they've dropped out of school at some of them in the sixth grade, eighth, ninth grade. Maybe they'll get a GED, whatever. You have to have some skills for someone to hire you. Right. So, I mean, they have to take opportunities that are available. If they're looking to clean up, well, then education is probably the surest outlet for them to better themselves, be it getting away from any addiction and moving on with their lives. And so I think taking advantage of educational opportunities that are out there would certainly be a key, and look for those.
Great question, Ramona. Let me go to Julie at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi, Amos. Hi to your guest.
Fine.
Howdy, ma'am.
Hi.
Hi. I have a comment, and it goes towards you guys were talking about what programs and preventions are there for gangs. And I believe that it does go to education. A lot of those kids get kicked out of school. They find any reason to kick them out of school. And they have amnesty for drug dealers, amnesty to turning guns. Why don't you have amnesty for gang members, you know, to help those kids? Because I always think if you can get them, I always say, if I can get you this boy to 23, he's going to outgrow that. And I know I used to be an officer with the juvenile boys, and they were really lashing out when they moved them out of Plainfield. And it was just fight every day. A lot of it is ignorance. They don't know. Some of them can't read or write. They want you to be scared of them. And when you're not, but normally they outgrow that age. What are they doing, you know, to help them? Is there amnesty for them? There are no programs. And the Boys and Girl Club, that's not going to cut it. They need some something. I don't know if I have the answer, some education, some, you know, first to keep them in school so they don't get to that point. Something has to happen to say, come talk to us. You know, PALS Club, does that even exist?
I'm not sure. I'm so confused on the PALS Club. Don't even let me go there. But, Julie, you really have started to hit on the other side of the problem. I mean, the folks in here, you know, see the problem every day. Their job is if somebody breaks
the problem every day.
Well, and their job is if somebody breaks the law, they gotta do their job and, you know, and prove the crime beyond a reasonable doubt and put them away. But but what I'm hearing today is this is a little bit more complicated problem than we thought, that somebody can be in more than one gang, and that's new information that we're learning, and that we have all kinds of other programs in this town, and we have no program to either reclaim gang members, or if we do, we don't know about it. So those of you, maybe somebody out there has a program, and maybe the prosecutors folk don't know about it. Y'all need to come to the surface at 239-1310 and do that. And the resources are not there. But she mentioned amnesty, and I know we've had limited kind of amnesty. Would any kind of amnesty work?
Well, I guess in what regards? What are we talking about here? Amnesty?
Yeah, Julie, I was a little confused when you said amnesty. What did you mean?
Like, I've heard of amnesty for drug dealers, turn yourself in, or whatever they do. I don't know. You know, I don't know. Amnesty for drug dealers. I've heard about it.
I don't know that they've had that kind of amnesty around here. Okay, well, hold on. Let me let Sean respond.
We haven't, to my knowledge. There have been a couple of small programs where we have targeted a specific area to, for example, to root out drug dealers, and you know, so we set up and did a bunch of buys, and you know, got everybody on audio and video, and then we brought in the group and. If somebody had very little limited nonviolent criminal history, they were given the option of getting a walk, not getting the case charged, but they had to, you know, promise to change their ways. And that was a bit of an amnesty. We had some problems with that program, funny enough, that everybody that was out dealing drugs, their histories were so terrible and so violent that, you know, we had trouble
even doing it.
We just, you know, it was a success in that we cleaned up the area for a while, but boy, everybody that we got was bad.
Great question though, Julie. Great question. Do we have an idea of numbers? Anybody have an idea how many individuals you all would define or law enforcement would define in gangs in Marion County?
I wouldn't. I don't have the data.
Should we know that?
Well, I don't think we ever will.
It's a moving number?
I guess you'd have problems with numbers because if one person is in three gangs,
yeah,
how do we count at once?
Yeah.
So immediately accounting's out the window.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm of the opinion that a lot of crime doesn't go unpunished, and there's things that we just don't know.
Is it fair to say it's thousands?
I don't know.
You don't know. So we really don't know. In terms of we know it's more than 10.
Yes, and
we know it's more than 100. So
yes.
It's in the hundreds would be a fair lowball.
Yeah, I don't think thousands is of members.
Okay.
Of people that are in criminal gangs, what we define as criminal gangs per the statute, people who in their own minds may think they're just clicked up and may just rob somebody every now and then, but will then say they're not in a gang.
Mm-hmm.
I could see that number being in the thousands.
Mm-hmm. But the 239-1310, 239-1310 is after news. Let me go quickly back to the phones and Pierre right quick. Hi there.
Good afternoon, Amos.
Good afternoon.
Yes, I have a criticism of the prosecutor's office. Amos, when's the last time you've seen a prosecutor or prosecutor Curry or anybody do a public service announcement to kids, advising them of the pitfalls of being gang membership?
I don't know that we have.
Okay.
Other than Ms. Fleetwood and I being on the show today.
Okay.
And here's the other thing. You've got a system of neighborhood prosecutors. Do these prosecutors go out to the local high schools, maybe with law enforcement and corrections officers, and tell these kids what can happen to them if they engage in gang activity? Explain to them what conspiracy is, and you know, do you just go out and talk to these kids and let them know what it's all about? Because I don't think they're making the connection. I think they go out and do things, and then deal with the consequences if they happen. But clearly, I don't see any outreach effort on the prosecutor's office to tell these kids. And I don't care if you're poor. There is no reason to go out and kill somebody or rob somebody or bash somebody in the head. And if you want to get out of a gang, if you're in a gang, these kids need to know, they need to be given some tools on how to, for example, if you have a problem with somebody, you need to put it in, you need to put pen to paper and you need to identify these people. And that way, if something does happen to you or one of your friends or your family, the police and the prosecutors at least have a reference point for somebody to go after. So, are you doing outreach, and are you telling these kids in these high schools, through your neighborhood prosecutors, what can happen to them, how they can throw their, like that kid that went downtown and shot up the place, his life is over, as it should be for the near-term future, because he could have killed a whole lot of people.
And let me let them respond.
Yes, there is outreach. There are programs that are conducted by our community prosecution division. with and without the police. So there is some level of outreach that's a different unit that they are on the preventative side, and you know they do what they can with the resources that they have. And then by the time it gets to us, we are the reactionary division.
But and I know you guys are just the worker bees in the Marion County Prosecutor's Office, but given the proliferation of schools that we now have in Marion County between IPS, the townships, and all of these charter schools, and because I'm willing to bet you they're gang members that are in charter schools as well as in IPS, as well as in the townships, do we need a more coordinated effort? Because that's a lot of schools to hit. Do we need a more coordinated effort? And then that's something that our elected prosecutor can sit down with our elected sheriff and sit down with the elected mayor and sit down with the allegedly overpaid deputy mayor of education. Yeah, until I meet this guy, you know, and know what he's going to do, I'm going to, for $120,000, I'm going to put extra work on this, on the brother here so that I get my money's worth to really do what Pierre said, because I'm going back and thinking. The last, I think, outreach for young people to do right was some anti-gun violence things. It was with a federal grant back when Susan Brooks was United States Attorney. And we've not seen anything like that since. I don't think in the previous prosecutor's administration we really had anything. I'm trying to be, you know, some bipartisan criticisms. I think when Scott Newman was prosecutor, I think there were some outreach efforts. But anyway, Pierre, great question. 239-1310, 239-1310 this afternoon. We're learning stuff today. And it took two dedicated, veteran, hardworking prosecutors. They even look like some of the hardworking prosecutors on these TV. So when you go later tonight to praiseindy.com, and we'll have this interview, you'll see some pictures of them. And you'll say, doggone it, they look like real prosecutors. Anyway, it's After News with tomorrow's St. Jude Radiothon, among other things. Friday, we're going to be live at the 911 Center. First ever radio broadcast from the 911 Center. We're going to find out, what do you really need if you got to call 911 on a real emergency? What kind of information do those operators need to do their job? How important is it to stay calm even when, you know, you're confronted with something very emotional, very frightened? And more importantly, what don't you call 911 for and you need to call the library or 211 or call your neighbor? Anyway, that's coming up on Friday. It's After News with Amos after these. 239-1310. Back to the phones. And Donna, hi there.
Hi, Amos.
Hi.
I'm just trying to get some clarification, and this is a very interesting topic. By identifying gangs, are they charging the gang members with a stronger felony, or they're going to get more time for crimes that are already on the book? That's one question. And how long have they been identifying gangs and adding additional charges? And since they've done this, have they shown that this deterred or prevent the number of participation in gangs? And then thirdly, how did they come up with the number of three or more being identifiable as a gang?
Well, I know three or more is in the state statute, so the legislature wrote that in there, but Sean, the gang statute is not an enhancement to a crime, is it?
Sometimes. To answer her question, generally, you're going to get more time for the underlying crime. For example, if it's a robbery or burglary, something like that, those are B felonies. The criminal gang charge is a D felony, our lowest level felony. So they would get more time for the act, you know, sort of the act, and then being in the gang is on top of it. Now, however, there is a criminal gang enhancement that mm-hmm. is a sentencing enhancement where we prove essentially all of the same stuff, that you're in a gang with, you know, these three or more people, and that you did the thing to further the gang. And we've been using sort of these terrible examples of murder, but if you murder a rival gang member because his gang dissed your gang and you have orders, and it's if it's clearly a gang hit – and you're charged with murder plus criminal gang enhancement, first we prove the murder, then we prove the criminal gang enhancement, that the murder was because of that, it doubles the sentence.
So it's like the enhancement. If you commit a crime with your bare hands, that's one thing. If you commit it with a firearm, there's an enhanced penalty.
Like that, yes.
Like that. Yes. All right, Donna, great question. 239-1310, 239-1310. Let me go to Bill right quick. Hi, Bill. Bill? Bill going once. Bill going twice. Bill loses his place. We've covered kind of a lot of territory today. And we know some of it is parents of younger kids. Some of it, you know, are older kids. What, from both of your perspectives, what's the biggest advice you could give to listeners now on what they could do to reduce gang violent activity or crime-breaking activity, I guess is the best way to say it?
Well, this doesn't apply to gangs. We touched on it earlier with distrust of the police and distrust of the prosecutor's office. And that's, I guess, a societal problem that we have to figure out how to get past. Mm-hmm. For us to prove these cases, we need the people. Mm-hmm. We need witnesses. We need people that are willing to testify. We need people in the neighborhood to stand up and say, not in my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So we need community support. So I guess the community, and by community, I mean Indianapolis, Marion County. Mm-hmm. We all need to be together in this, that we're not going to tolerate crime, violence or otherwise. I mean, graffiti is bad as well, but people have to be willing to report it, and they have to be willing to follow up. We get a lot of reports. The police file a lot of reports. They bring us a lot of cases where a witness or a victim will say, you know, he fired a gun at me. And then as we get closer and closer to trial, they might have a change of heart. Mm-hmm. And if all I've got is one witness who originally said he fired a gun at me, and then, well, maybe it was him,
you don't have a case.
Right. And then that's it. So, okay, well, he walks because you don't want to testify. I'm not saying that there aren't legitimate reasons, but we have to be willing and have the courage to stand up and fight the gangs.
What is the thing with gang signs? Is gang signs a crime? In other words, you all have sat in the studio. You've seen me wave my hand and do the things that I do to tell Chris certain things to do. If I were standing in an apartment complex at 42nd and Post Road, and I was explaining to people out there how I do what I do, and I started flashing am I flashing a gang sign? Have I broken a law?
You probably haven't. Can a gang sign be a crime? Yes, it can, depending on what you're trying to do. If you're just making a hand sign, I don't want to call it a gang sign. If you have a group and you identify yourself and you throw up whatever, a W, mm-hmm. And that's just who you are. You're the W.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's fine. There's no crime. But if there's somebody else on the other side of the street who's associated with the E and you throw up the W to them to let them know that they got to get out of here because this is your turf, you're intimidating them. Then you have committed a crime.
Because I've always heard this. We saw him flash a gang sign, so we went over in the red. I'm going, wait a minute. How do you know? It always intimidates me when it's expo time and classic time. I'm afraid to move my hands downtown because I'm figuring, if I'm showing somebody how I do something, they'll say, he's not waving. He's flashing something.
Right.
But if somebody across the street was from the rival gang from the radio stations with the studios made of gold down on the circle, so if Garrison was across the street and I waved at Garrison, then Garrison waves back at me, then we could be intimidating. We've learned something. Yeah, tell Greg I would do that. Anyway, we guys want to thank you, Sean Hessler and Marianne Fleetwood with the Marion County Prosecutor's Office. Guys, thanks very much for being with us. Glad to have you.
Glad to be here.
I was just
going to say, hopefully we've started a dialogue at least, and hopefully we'll get something done.
We're going to do this again. And when we do this again, I think, Chris, the men and women of law enforcement need to be in here. The men and women of education need to be in here. Maybe the United Way. They got a little money to try to. Because I'm still want to go back. We need some programs. If somebody wants to get, you can get deprogrammed out of a cult, and you can't get deprogrammed out of a gang in Marion County.